You're listening to WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your host, Jeff Chandler.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 120 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, September 6th, 2013. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, and thank God this week is over with. I don't need to get any gruesome details, but I'm just glad this week is over with. Looking forward to tonight's show for a number of reasons, and the first is that the first time in a long time I won't be doing this show alone. In fact, I have a partner in crime, and believe it or not, it's a female. So whether you want to rejoice or not, I mean, I think that's cool because when I listen to shows, I definitely love listening to a female voice versus a male voice. But, you know, with all that thrown aside, I'm going to introduce her right now. And her name is Sarah Gooding. And you may recognize her name from the likes of WPMU.org and some other sites that she has been a part of. And Sarah, thank you for being on the show and for accepting my invitation to co-host this show with me.
Thanks for inviting me, Jeff. Great to be here.
So tell us, you know, one of the first stories that we have this week is actually you. So, Sarah Gooding joins WP Tavern. Tell us what that means, where you've come from. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, sure. I've been using WordPress since about 2008, and shortly thereafter I started writing for WPMU, and I wrote, I think, like 1,500 articles for them.
Holy moly.
Almost every single day. And that was my life for the past 4 years. And then I talked with Matt Mullenweg. He invited me to join the tavern full time. So that was a pretty cool opportunity that I didn't want to pass up. And so here I am.
So from that experience, 4 years on one website, which has turned into quite a big website in terms of content, and they have the whole membership program going on. Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like writing for WPMU.org. I mean, was it exciting? Was it just cool? Or,
well, yeah, it was exciting. I just counted myself lucky that I got to write about WordPress. I mean, for me, that was a major thing, and I worked with a lot of different people over there because they've got, you know, like, I don't know, 20 developers and designers and support staff. So it's quite a large number of people that they have, and we're all interacting all the time. And so there's a lot of emails back and forth, and it was great. There was always somebody to ask questions and you know, help you out with something if you're stuck. But overall, it was a pretty good experience.
So. When we say you were brought on to the tavern, I want to make the point clear that you are now working under Audrey Company, which is the same company I work for, or employed by Matt. So you and I, we're coworkers now. Hooray. So the reason why I'm excited about that is I've been writing for the tavern now for a long time. And I've been doing it by myself, although recently Marcus Couch has been contributing some content in terms of his daily plugin post and plugin review post. But now I'm just stoked that I have someone like you who has the experience and the drive and just someone that's there with me that understands what it is I'm doing here on the site on a day-to-day basis, where most of the day is spent in an inbox doing correspondence, getting leads, trying to piece together content, making stories. It's crazy. So I'm just stoked to have you on board with me and to have a collaborator and just have someone there in the trenches with me instead of kind of doing this alone. And your first week here at the tavern has been incredible. You've published a couple of great stories. People were commenting, and I think it's been a great week, great first week for you at the tavern so far. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's been a lot of fun interacting with some new people and, you know, just putting those stories out there. It's always a rush especially when you get some news the night before and you're able to publish it right when it's happening.
Right.
That's usually the most exciting thing for me, but it makes you feel a part of a greater community instead of just being at home in your pajamas by yourself.
Right. So once again, I'm glad to have you aboard. Welcome. And the drinks are on the house, as the site slogan should imply. To my guest, I'm not sure if I can extend that opportunity to my guest, but to you, certainly. So let's dive into some of this week's stories. The first one I want to talk about is WordCamp Detroit. We found out earlier this week that WordCamp Detroit 2013 was indeed canceled, much to the chagrin of many in the Michigan area, especially to those who attended WordCamp Grand Rapids, which is a city not too far away from Detroit. One of the main organizers, TJ List, came out and announced on the WordCamp Detroit blog that the event was canceled, which I thought was peculiar, so I sent some questions to him via email, because that's what we do, that's our job, and he sent me a detailed response back. He was very honest and about what happened with the event, and what it came down to was his lack of strong leadership, his ability to communicate, and to organize tasks in a manner that would allow them to get done, and just trying to keep everyone on the same page. And just really quickly, I want to outline the five lessons that he learned that he wanted to share to every other WordCamp organizer out there so that they don't end up in the same boat he did. So number one is to do your homework, and he says, read the helpful hints and suggestions that other WordCamp organizers have so generously left behind. And he says there are a lot of killer resources out there, and use them. Number two is to start early. He says 6 months might be enough, and he says to ask us that next summer and see if that answer changes. So we'll see what happens with WordCamp Detroit 2014. Number three is ask for help. He says then do it again and again. You can never have enough help when it comes to organizing WordCamps. Number four was create a detailed project plan. Establish key milestones at the beginning of the process. Date, venue, theme for the conference, website, live date, cutoff dates, everything that would be encompassed into getting the project off the ground, making it successful. Number five was ask, don't assume. Get commitments from the key organizers and volunteers. What can they realistically deliver? We're talking about doing this again in 2014. He says, and he'll be starting fresh with number one from his list, meaning do your homework. So, I wrote about this, and I think it's just another example of how important it is to have someone with strong leadership skills that can assign tasks, delegate, make sure everybody's on the same page to ensure that a WordCamp event is successful. And I've spoken with many WordCamp organizers, and the one thing all of them will say, one of the first things they say, is that it was not easy. The WordCamp Central and the WordPress Foundation makes it easier to put on the event, especially when it comes down to cost, expenses, things of that nature. But the act of getting the venue, putting together speakers, sponsorships, everything else of that magnitude is on the shoulders of the WordCamp event organizers and volunteers. And I've never organized one myself, but I've talked to many to know and understand that it's not easy, even for multiple WordCamp organizers, it's not easy. So, Sarah, I'm not sure about your experience with running a WordCamp or how many you've been to, but how important do you think, from your perspective, is strong leadership in order to make something like a WordCamp event successful?
Well, actually, I've only been to one WordCamp in Vancouver when they did the first Buddy Camp. And from what I could tell, the people organizing it probably didn't sleep. I mean, they were just running everywhere. They were communicating with people on Twitter and email and organizing people, and they did an excellent job. But it definitely looks like it's a lot of hard work. And they had, you know, some volunteers, which is great, and they put on a fantastic event. But, I don't have any experience organizing one myself.
Well, now that you're part of Audrey Co. and our job is to write about what's going on in the WordPress community, I'm going to ask you, how many WordCamps have you been to next year? And I think you're going to say more than one.
I definitely hope so.
Yeah. I mean, they're really cool. And I go to these WordCamp events, and I'm trying to hang out with the organizers, and I'm trying to talk to them. But because their attention needs to be on so many different things, they're running around. They're going crazy. I have all the respect in the world for somebody that puts on a WordCamp event, because it's not easy.
Yeah, definitely looks like a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. So, WordCamp Detroit 2013 canceled, but they are going to do their best to put on a fantastic event for WordCamp Detroit 2014. As someone jokingly said in the comments, hopefully Detroit is there as a city in 2014 to have a WordCamp at, but the city's not going to disappear. I just thought that was kind of funny due to their whole bankruptcy and everything. But anyways, moving on, this is a story that I loved reading because it started off with the idea in the beginning and it kind of progressed from idea on a napkin to actually launching. And Sarah, you actually published this and it was about PressGram launching. So kind of give us an insight as to how PressGram launched.
From what I understand, they've been working on it. Well, he's been working on it alone for a year. They launched actually on their 1 year anniversary of starting the project. And I got in touch with him. I was wondering what was going on with the project, and I decided to just send him an email. And he brought me back right away. Hey, this is great timing because I just heard within an hour that, you know, we should be going live soon. But then I guess iTunes Connect was down all day and everyone was just waiting for it to get out there. And so I sent him over some interview questions and he replied back and I was able to put a post up about covering the history of how he got to where he is and what the app does and just a few interesting things behind what happened as he was making it and the funding and the future of it.
So, I thought it was, so it's powered by WordPress plus iOS with filtered photos added in. The biggest thing about PressGram was that it would allow users to own their own data and the content is always yours. It targets users and publishers and it currently makes use of open source photo filters. So all really cool stuff. And I think one of the coolest things about it is it's free.
Yes.
So, I know at one point in the article you had mentioned to John, what about the, you know, considering the open source nature of WordPress, why isn't PressGram as open as, let's say, WordPress? What was his thoughts on that?
Well, his answer was that for his workflow, in order to get this software out the door, the only way it would really work for him was to just, you know, crank it out himself. So, he is open to the idea of changing the license down the road. I'm not sure what he's considering or how he'll decide that, but I think it'd be pretty cool if he made it open source because I'm sure a lot of people would jump on board and send him, you know, patches, fixes, and maybe even new features. And he might even find somebody who is able to whip up an Android app pretty quickly. There's a huge, you know, crowd of people who would love to try the app, but they're not on iOS, so they can't.
I haven't tried PressGram. I have the iPhone 4. I have not tried PressGram, and I have not used Instagram. And as I told you before the show, I have a rant, an old man's rant against Instagram and things like PressGram. Not so much of what PressGram does and offers, but the whole idea of taking pictures with your phone and then essentially photoshopping them with some crazy filter and then putting them out onto Twitter or wherever. And it drives me nuts that people are taking pictures of sunsets or they're on the beach or certain pieces of atmosphere and they put some kind of weird blue tint. It's like this service like Instagram and PressGram make it so easy for people to ruin their photos. I don't get it. I don't understand why people love ruining their photos. Why, you know, when people take a picture and I look at it, I want to see what they're seeing. I want to see the sunset they're seeing as it is. You know, I don't want to see it as if it was in 1960 or it's got this weird TV box around it or what have you. And I just want to throw it out there to you. What do you think about the whole notion of applying filters to photos? I mean, is it something that you think is cool? I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I definitely think it's cool. I mean, I just have a lot of fun with it because sometimes I take a photo and it looks really crappy, you know, and the lighting, it doesn't look how it looks to my eyes, but if I put a different filter on it, it looks almost like you're seeing it there, especially some of the orange type filters. But my husband hates the idea of it, and he thinks that, you know, it ruins the pictures, and it knocks them down to such a low resolution that they look like crap in his mind. But I just have fun with it, and I think a lot of people like it for artistic expression.
Wow. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not going to be convinced of that. I feel like one of those old men saying, "Get off my lawn." You know, I just don't understand why people are using Pressgram, Instagram, putting those weird photo or filters on their photos, and just, in my opinion, ruining them. I don't know. I haven't really come across too many. I mean, there's some photos I've seen through Instagram that look cool based on the filters they use, but most of them, it's like, come on, you know, I want to see what you're seeing, and I know you're not seeing some blue tinted sun. So that's my personal rant about photos and filters and everything else. But the whole general concept of Pressgram is cool. Although there was a post published earlier today, actually, by George Stefanis, who is a WordPress core contributor and works on Jetpack and a number of other things, and he published a list of Pressgram security concerns. So what he did, he looked into certain types of data and what was going on between the communication of Pressgram and what it was doing, and what he found out was that there's a middleman, a server, in between uploading a photo or taking a photo of Pressgram and putting it onto the WordPress site. It actually has to go through a middleman, a server first, and that the password, I believe, is stored in plain text, and that password is, he says, "I've also captured the request that the Pressgram app uses to send your password up to the Pressgram server," and I think it was stored in plain text. I think that was, okay, so he says right here, "They're all signed with username and password, meaning that the Pressgram servers now have my username and password in plain text with not even a notification to me in their privacy policy or terms of service." So there's definitely some security implications here. John Saddington, the founder of Pressgram, has left a comment on the post saying that, "Thank you for bringing these to light," and he will definitely look into them and post his findings or do whatever fixes are necessary. But one of the other things in the comments that I thought was interesting is that a lot of people are wondering what happened to the idea of Pressgram being used to take a photo, apply a filter, upload it to your WordPress site. It seems to be that this is the first time a lot of Pressgram users are discovering that there's a middleman involved, and that it's not that there's a lot of people that don't want to use Pressgram for the social filter, but just to strictly upload their photos to the WordPress site. I sent this link to you before the show, Sarah, and I don't know if you have any opinions on what the new findings are with Pressgram.
I read through it. I read through the comments too. I think he recognized, you know, that there's a lot of work to be done on the app. It's not perfect on the first day it launches. I think he's probably willing to make those changes as far as security goes. But he did intend the social aspect to be in there. That was in the Kickstarter info. That was part of the plan, and a lot of people do enjoy that aspect of it, and some people don't. But with Instagram, you know, sometimes it doesn't even feel like it's a social aspect if you just post your photos there and you don't go explore other people. But hopefully, and I haven't had a chance to look at the app, that there should be some privacy settings and that I haven't had the chance to explore it. Maybe somebody in the chat room has tried it. But I think he just, people can just cut him some slack, you know, while he fixes these things and figures it out. I think for a lot of creators, they just want to make something that works and get it out there and see what people will do with it. And then from there, take feedback and send it in one direction or another. And, you know, maybe it's not perfect, but it does something that a lot of people enjoy. So I think that's cool.
That's kind of like Matt Mullenweg's post a few years ago, or maybe a few years ago, where he talks about how 1.0 is the loneliest number, about how it's so hard to get to that 1.0, but to just release it and see what other people do with it, and then just start the process from there on improving it and doing iterations of it. just at get over that hurdle, just release it out to the wild, and then fix it from there is was pretty much the basis behind this post. And I think and John has mentioned in the comments, thank you for the sincerity. He's going to do everything he can to work on that and improve the service. And there's another aspect to this story is the lack of the terms of service for PressGram is not as clearly defined as maybe as it should be. I think some people have brought up the fact that it doesn't, in the terms of service, it doesn't specify what's going on here and how there's a middleman involved and some other things like that. And in fact, previous to the show, George also published his review of what's going on in the PressGram terms of service guidelines. And I will link to that in the show notes. I didn't have a chance to read it, but I think it's good stuff to read. And I think John will take care of things. And at the end of the day, he'll do what's right for both the service and everybody that backed him on Kickstarter. So with that all said, I want to introduce our special guest this evening. His name is Quinn Hoxie. I believe that's how you say your last name. He is one of the founders of Swifttype. He is an engineer by trade, but he works on all aspects of the company, from product sales to customer support. He built a good portion of the Swifttype WordPress plugin and has experience working on a large variety of search systems, ranging from small websites to ones in the Alexa top 1000. And Quinn, thank you very much for spending some of your Friday evening with us. Hopefully you've got a cool beverage in hand as you're on the show with us.
Thanks very much for having me, guys. It's good to be here.
So just so you know, before we start the interview, I want to let you know that my wife likes the Swifttype shirt on me, and she says it makes it appear that I have muscles, whatever that means.
We specially craft those shirts, you know, for maximum muscles.
that's crazy. It fits on me in such a way where, yeah, I mean, it emphasizes what biceps I have, but unfortunately, it also so shows how much beer I've been drinking at my tavern that I run. But I digress. So Quinn, what motivated you to start Swifttype?
So the real motivation came. My co-founder and I were at a company called Scribd, which is like a document sharing website.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
And so when we were there, they had kind of, you know, they have tons and tons of content. And so we ended up spending a lot of time trying to get search working correctly. And so we tried to buy some solutions, and then we kind of, you know, basically evaluated some and didn't find anything we liked. And these were kind of, you know, high dollar, you know, big ticket solutions. And then we ended up trying to build it internally, and we had a couple of false starts there. And eventually we just kind of built it ourselves. And it was my co-founder, Matt. I was on his team at the time, and it ended up being our team that built search there. And after the whole process, we kind of were wondering, you know, why wasn't this something we could buy? It's not an easy problem, but it's, you know, it's something that you could turn into a product and actually, you know, provide a good service to people. So after, you know, a few years of us working at Scribd, we decided that we were going to, you know, go solve that problem for everyone.
Nice. So what makes search in general so hard?
I think it's hard for a few reasons. It's a challenge from a technological standpoint. You know, getting something that works well, and part of search working well means, you know, it's stable, it's fast, you know, you get updates quickly. So just because you can serve a query really quickly doesn't mean you can get new content in there and serve queries to those really quickly as well. And so there's a lot of aspects to it technologically. And that's where a lot of companies end up having some difficulty getting it right. But the other part of it is that, like, with all the research on the technology that goes into search, there's, you know, this whole other aspect of it, which is like the product aspect, like how are users going to actually interact with search in a way that is beneficial to them and beneficial to, you know, whatever the business is. So, you know, this whole product aspect makes it really difficult too. So it's kind of both those sides are difficult, and a lot of problems, you know, one side or the other is difficult, but search, it's really both sides of it, and it creates a pretty big challenge, you know. So you have to have the technological experts to solve it, and then you have to have people who can, you know, build out a proper UI and, you know, kind of predict what users are going to do and improve things over time as well.
So, wow, that's interesting. And for anybody listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions about search, WordPress search, or Swift type in general, feel free to ask them in the chat room. We'll get them to Quinn. So, the notion, how should I say this? The long-term mentality or thought process is that WordPress or the search, built-in search in WordPress sucks, to put it bluntly. And there are many ways to try and solve that problem. Many come in the form of plugins, but SwiftType is more of a service. So based on the research you guys have done, what are some of the technical pain points of the built-in WordPress search functionality that you guys discovered?
So obviously the built-in search is limited for a few reasons. So at the simplest level, and one thing that probably most people will notice is when you do a search by default in WordPress, you basically get results that are sorted based on how recent the post is. And there's a good reason for that, and that's that it's kind of a true or false matching on the text. So it says, you know, did the user's query match against this post? And if it did, then it's included in the results. But there isn't like a scoring factor. So there isn't, you know, any notion of how relevant was this post. It's just, did it match or did it not? And so they get those posts, and then the best they can do is sort them by date. And so that's one of the most obvious things that you end up with, is that there's kind of no notion of relevance. It's just whether it matched or not.
So that might be the reason why initially I didn't have a problem with the built-in WordPress search. It seemed to work fairly well for me, but now that I've reached over the 1,000 post threshold on the site, it's pretty much gotten useless. I mean, that's why I'm using SwiftType now.
Right. And so, yeah, it becomes an issue when you have enough content that maybe first page of results isn't going to include maybe what you expect it to. So if you're looking for a post that has maybe some common terms, but it's, you know, a better match for them, and it's, you know, a year or two old, you know, there's a good chance it's not going to come up for the first few pages, which, you know, ends up being kind of an issue when, you know, people start to notice basically when you get that much content, like that you're not showing the most relevant results, you're just showing the results that match.
Right.
So another piece of it is just, you know, once you start getting a bunch of content, and there are some, you know, even medium-sized WordPress sites can feel this pain, is that it gets kind of slow. And you'll often see a lot of the largest WordPress sites just have the default search disabled because the actual database that the search is going to can't handle the query, because it's actually a very heavyweight query that hits the database to make it happen. And that's just because, you know, WordPress uses a database called MySQL, and it's not designed to serve these queries. So the other side of that is that, you know, one of the reasons WordPress is so great is that it does a lot with, you know, a very simple installation and something that a lot of people can handle, and that's why it's been so popular, one of the reasons. And so it's actually very impressive that they can, you know, have a working search function just based on these same technologies in like PHP and MySQL, even though they weren't, you know, directly meant for that use case.
Yeah, and just, I, by the way, just as a user, I hate coming across a website, especially one powered by WordPress, and they have no search box to be found, whether it's disabled or they don't want to use it. I don't know. It drives me nuts, just as a personal pet peeve of mine. But a few years ago, I noticed that Matt Mullenweg's site, his personal blog, you know, running on WordPress, I'm thinking, okay, cool. He wants to showcase everything WordPress is capable of. And I'm looking at his search box, and it says, powered by Google Custom Search. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that seems a little odd. Wouldn't you want to use the built-in WordPress search? But he's come out and admit that for his site and the type of content he has, that it makes more sense, pretty much that Google Custom Search works better than the built-in search for WordPress. And I thought that was really interesting. And there's a lot of people out there who are using Google Custom Search to offload their search processes versus using the one built into WordPress. And on that same topic, what are some of the key points of difference between something like SwiftType, which is also service-based, and Google Custom Search?
Yeah, so I think what, you know, most of the differences come down to, and there are quite a few, but to, you know, to give you a high-level overview, it's that, you know, when SwiftType, when we're building our search product, and that includes, you know, WordPress plugin, our whole suite of tools, you know, our whole goal is for you to satisfy the users of your website. And, you know, fundamentally, Google's goal is to satisfy people who are doing global searches on Google.com. And it's nice because they offer kind of a filtered down version of that for people's websites, but the goals are still there for like the global websites. And so that manifests itself in a number of different ways. You know, example I like to give is that say you have like a promotions page on your website and you're kind of pushing something for, you know, the summer or things like that. And Google, one of the biggest problems they have to fight, and they're very good at it, is things like spam or content that isn't high value. And so anything on your website, even if you're using Google Custom Search, is, you know, subject to those same rules. And so they may deem that that promotions page is spam, and it may not show up in your results, which is really unfortunate. But again, it's just subject to them wanting to satisfy their global users. And then another part is just control. General control. And so with SwiftType, you know, one of the original ideas was that, you know, you have these amazing tools like WordPress that give you full control over all aspects of your site's content. And yet you have this, you know, you have this feature that is search, and most websites is just kind of this black box, even though it's used by everyone. It's just kind of this black box that you don't really know how it works, and you don't really have control over how it works, which is really unfortunate. And so SwiftType, we kind of wanted to make like a, you know, effectively like a CMS for search, to where you can go in and you can move results around if you don't like them, you can remove content if you don't want it, you can promote content, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of that, SwiftType has something that's cool. I don't utilize it much, but I could see how valuable it could become, is that in the back end, one of the features that you guys offer is the ability to manipulate the results based on relevance. So if you noticed a search result is popping up as first multiple times and is not exactly the most relevant thing that you think should be showing up for that search term, that search query, you can actually drag and drop search results up and down so that you can make whatever you think is more relevant show up near the top of the list. I think that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, just being able to let people adjust their search engine to work exactly how they want it to and kind of guiding them through that. So we provide analytics and things like that. So, you know, so you actually can, if you want to just go in and blindly try to move all your results around, you might not get very far because you might not know exactly what to look for. But, you know, pairing that with analytics, you know, you get a good idea of what is most important to your users and how you can better serve them.
Yes. Speaking of analytics, I've been keeping tabs on the analytic reports that are automatically sent to my address as I'm a user of SwiftType, and I'm seeing search terms that I'm not comfortable with that I can't believe some people are searching for the things that are showing up in my analytics reports that I've not written anything about, and it's just mind-boggling. I don't know why they're searching, but I have a feeling that because it's a form on the website that it's probably from automated bots or automated spam. I'm not sure what it is, but it's definitely not from humans, or it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah, you do see some interesting stuff. You know, when you have a website that gets a decent amount of traffic, the things that can go into your forms are definitely surprising to a lot of people. But we see cases. Analytics is really interesting because, you know, like I said, it's always been kind of that black box. You know, search, people do a search and they hopefully get results, but you don't really know what they searched for or anything like that. And so one of the things we do is we show you what people have been searching for that you don't have results for. Mm-hmm. And we've had these like really cool cases where people will go in and we'll get emails from customers saying like, hey, like I have this search that's been searched like hundreds of times that I don't have content for. I think that's a mistake.
Oh,
and
we'll kind of go back
through and check. And in fact, like their users are actually looking for that and they don't have it. And it's who knows how long it's been happening, but they didn't know until they got those analytics. So it's always really cool to kind of see those informing business decisions and content decisions.
Yeah, I've been down that road. I've used something like Woopra for a long time where I'm able to see the different search queries that people are arriving at my site, and based on the different queries they're using, I can see a list of the most popular ones. And when they're searching for content, that I've actually, you can click on the query and see what the results are and look and see if it's very relevant. And if it's not, I've actually written a couple of posts specifically to handle those search queries. It does work, and it's been pretty cool.
That's excellent. Yeah.
So we spoke about some of the pain points that are involved with the built-in WordPress search functionality. How does something like SwiftType specifically alleviate those pain points?
So one of the main things we focus on is, well, you know, to step back a little bit, the, you know, what we think are some of the main factors in a good search experience for users are speed and relevance. And, you know, providing results quickly is really critical. And this is something that, you know, places like Google spend a ton of time on. And, you know, the faster, there's countless studies that show, like, the faster you can get results to users, you know, the more likely they are to stay on your site, to engage with your content. And you know, if you have really, you know, big conversions, like, say, you're an e-commerce shop, you know, adding things to the cart, purchasing things, faster search results are always going to improve those conversions. And so we try to focus on that. And then the other piece is just relevance. And we do, you know, we try to focus a lot on relevance because there's a lot of different ways we can improve it for people. One, you know, our base relevance, we think is really good, and we get a lot of positive feedback from users on it. But that's something that, you know, out of the box, we want, you know, when people try it out, they should have a good experience. So they should be able to type in a search and immediately say, like, these are good results. Like, this is what I was expecting to see.
Yeah. And you know, one of my favorite features of SwiftType is the auto suggestion box.
Exactly. Exactly. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of aspects of search that have changed quite a bit over the last few years. So, you know, people use sites like Facebook and Amazon and Google all the time. And through those websites, they've kind of come to expect certain features. So they come to expect, you know, they get a really rich autocomplete where they're, you know, where they don't even have to finish typing and it takes them to the content they're looking for. And so that's the kind of stuff that we try to offer to everyone because, you know, everybody should be able to provide that same experience to their users.
So now, unlike my experience with something like the Elasticsearch plugin, which was difficult to configure after installation, I just kind of blew my mind. SwiftType was a breeze. I mean, it was a breath of fresh air. Who do I thank for that installation and configuration experience?
So in the chat, if you see somebody named M. Riley, that's the guy. That's the guy to thank for that. He set up the configuration initially, but I mean, it's been a team effort. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we really try to aim for is that, you know, search is, it's a really complicated thing. There are tons and tons of aspects, like I said, technologically that go into it. And there are all sorts of knobs and things that you could tweak. And what we want to do is we want to give the power of all those things to our customers, but we don't want them to have to think about it.
Right.
I don't think people should have to be search experts to use a search product. And so that's kind of what our goal is, to provide minimal configuration but still give people, you know, the full power of search. And so it's a constant balance that we have to try to maintain. And, you know, it's going to be a lot going forward. We get a lot of feature requests for our WordPress plugin. And I think that, you know, going forward, that's going to be kind of something we have to really focus on, is, you know, not adding too much complexity there for the users to have to think about.
Sort of like the WordPress development philosophy: decisions, not options.
Exactly.
which I agree with sometimes, and other times it drives me up the wall. But right. You know, I digress. I think Sarah actually has been in touch with the SwiftType people a few times during email. I think she has a couple questions she'd like to ask you.
Sure.
So Sarah, take it away.
Hi, yeah, I've used SwiftType on a number of sites and had a great experience with it. I'm just wondering, do you know what percentage of SwiftType users are running WordPress? Is it like the vast majority of the people using it, or is that a small segment?
So it's definitely not the majority, but it's actually been a really strong segment for us. I would say it's in the range of like 15 to 20% of our user base. Which is actually very cool because we have a very diverse user base. And I think, you know, one of the things we've really enjoyed about, you know, working with the WordPress community, which has been amazing, is that, you know, and there's tons of feedback out there, and it's just like a really strong community compared to other places that we've worked. And people are really willing to give feedback because for us, you know, we're an early stage company and, you know, we're still trying to, you know, iron out the product. And so it's been really cool that 15-20% has probably been, you know, been able to drive like, you know, 75% of, you know, the feedback and on features and kind of future development that we've had.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know that. I mean, since I've only really been a part of the WordPress community, I didn't know that the other ones aren't as strong on feedback. That's interesting.
Well, I wonder if that has something to do with just the huge user base of WordPress, or something to that effect.
I think it's a little bit of the size of the community, but it's also, I think that, you know, people like WordPress users just seem to be, I guess, just, you know, more inclined. I think they've probably seen the benefits of giving feedback. You know, WordPress has evolved so much, and, you know, a lot of the plugins and things like that have evolved so much over time based on, you know, the community. I think that, you know, probably has something to do with it, which is, you know, fantastic for us and other companies.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of a priority is the ongoing development of the SwiftType WordPress plugin? Are you guys adding new features actively, or is it mostly just, you know, keeping up with bug fixes and updates?
So we definitely, you know, the biggest priority is obviously keeping it stable. Like I said, that's, you know, it's a big piece for us. But we probably every single day, you know, discuss what the next steps are going to be with the WordPress plugin. We try to keep, you know, pretty regular updates out there. And that doesn't mean that every update is going to have a big new feature. We definitely want to keep focused on the core, but we kind of prioritize features internally based on the feedback we get. And so the whole community with WordPress is doing itself a favor for sure, at least with SwiftType, because, you know, it's we hear so much from them that, you know, we hear a lot about, for instance, like WooCommerce is, you know, has really moved up our priority list to you know, have better integration with WooCommerce because we hear so many people saying, you know, this is important to us. So that's something, you know, we do focus a lot on new features there. And I suspect over the next, you know, 3 to 4 months, there are actually going to be some pretty big new features landing. Some things that we investigate just to fill you guys in. You know, like I said, WooCommerce is a big one. And a lot of it's just going to be kind of integrations with other types of plugins. Multi-site is another one that we hear quite a bit about. And I think there's a lot of interesting options for how we can support that. So we are really looking to, you know, do some better integrations out there. And then another piece that's, you know, important to note about our WordPress plugin is that it's actually kind of a thin layer for us that talks to our, you know, our core service. This is, I think, Jeff, what you were alluding to earlier, that it's a plugin, but it's kind of a service. And so, you know, we're constantly adding features and building out, you know, the product that it applies to everyone. And, you know, all of our WordPress customers are, you know, reaping the benefits of that as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, multi-site was one of my next questions because I've used it with multi-site and found that it is compatible in that it will search each blog. But what we were wondering is when your team might consider adding network-wide indexing and searching for a whole multi-site network.
Yeah, so as it stands right now, I would say I think that's probably just behind WooCommerce on our list of priorities for WordPress. And part of the reason for that is that it's not totally clear cut for us yet. We've been trying to learn a lot about, you know, how to best offer that to people, because we've heard a lot of different cases of how people have multi-site set up and, you know, how the different sites interact or don't interact. So anyone who has feedback about that, we are, you know, really open to hearing it. You can, you know, post it in chat and we'll pick it up there, or, you know, if you send it to support@swifttype.com, we are really, you know, anxious to hear what your use case is and what you'd be interested in seeing there.
Now, on the topic of multi-site and network-wide indexing, would your current pricing plans? I know you have different plans based on how large your site is and the number of documents you have. And I believe, actually, really quickly, can you explain what a document is?
Yes, that is something that we need to make a little more. Basically, in WordPress, a document is like a post or a page or a custom post type. The reason we call them documents, that's kind of the engineers in us leaking out a little bit too much into the content, but basically a document is kind of what it's called in search jargon. It's kind of, you know, whatever a searchable, like, piece of text is.
Well, I'll give you this, if it makes you feel better, that the other search sites I've seen also call them documents, so it seems to be just a term everybody's using.
Okay, that's good to know.
I brought this up in my initial review of the site, the service and plugin on WPTavern.com, and I figured we could talk a little bit more about the problem here on the show. I mentioned that if I searched for something, let's say WordPress Weekly Episode 10, I would see episodes in the 100 to 110 range. I actually wouldn't see just Episode 10. It's almost as if SwiftType is assuming I met 100 and I just happened to miss a zero. Is my search query, if my search query only has two numbers, why do the results have three numbers?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, what was causing it in that case is we have, you know, basically we take in all these different factors. So like I was saying, WordPress, you know, by default takes in just kind of does the text match or not. The way SwiftType works at a really high level is we say first, you know, does the text match? And if it does, we take all those posts that it matches. And then we say, how closely does it match? So, you know, if you type the word, pages, and something has page, and then another document has pages, you know, the one that says pages should, you know, be a higher match than page, but they should both, you know, they're both relevant to the query.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece is that we have all this other data that we try to collect and also learn about over time. And that's like, you know, what did users do last time they did this search? Like, did they like this result? Did they click it? And factor that in as well. And so one of the things that one of those kind of external factors is, you know, how recently was this content created or updated? And so in your case, what it was doing is that it would look at the words like WordPress weekly episode, and it said, okay, these are probably like the most important words in this query. And then it would look at the number, and it's hard for it to kind of figure stuff out about the number. And so what it would do is that it would match based on the number, like you were saying, kind of similar numbers like 100. But what was happening is that because the later episodes in the 100 to 110 range
were recent,
it was ranking them ahead of the older episodes. Because it was kind of, when it gets into that, like those factors, they're all kind of like tiebreakers that we layer on, if that makes sense.
And so tiebreakers.
The recency thing was kind of bumping it up there.
Okay, that explanation makes perfect sense. I just thought, if you know, if I put in the exact name of a post, boom, that should be the first result. But obviously, maybe there's too many things that were, you know, with too many tiebreakers were tied into all these different posts.
Yeah, and so I think you know, a good point with that is that you know, no search system is perfect. And we definitely, you know, are constantly making improvements to that kind of thing. And I always like to tell people that search is really a moving target. Like, you know, you can't, you know, SwiftType will never be at a point where like, all right, this is it. Like, this is the perfect search algorithm or blend of search algorithms. You know, it's always going to be improving over time. And that's based on what we do research wise internally. And then also how we see users interacting with the platform. We can learn from that. So, you know, there's always things that we're going to be making better like that.
Out of curiosity, one of the most popular plugins when it comes to enhancing the WordPress search is called Relevancy, but it's Relevancy depending on how you want to say it. I'm just wondering, have you ever had a chance to check it out and try it for yourself, and if you have any thoughts or opinions on it?
So I'm familiar with it. I haven't like run it on a site myself, as far as, you know, like actually using it over an extended period of time. I think one of the cool things about it is that it kind of takes the same idea that WordPress has of, like, you know, use what we have with WordPress, and that's PHP and that's MySQL, and you know, basically do the best. Relevancy is cool because it does the best job that you can with those technologies. And I also think something that I got to say I really admire about what they've done with it is that they're very clear about, you know, what it's good for, and like maybe when you might not want to use it with the, like, you know, huge amounts of content.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's cool again that they've been able to, you know, extract more value and provide better results out of, you know, that same kind of lean package that WordPress comes in.
So Relevancy runs, as you said, with WordPress and makes the best of what WordPress has to offer. SwiftType, on the other hand, offloads all the search processing onto your own servers. I'm just wondering, have you guys released any benchmarks in terms of, let's say, the default search in WordPress versus on SwiftType, just to kind of give people a highlight of just how significant of a performance increase your site would have if you offloaded all the search processing to, let's say, SwiftType?
We have not, but that's actually a great idea. It's definitely, even for small sites that with the default WordPress search, you'll see an improvement. And so there, you know, one of the things that's tough, benchmark's always tough because, you know, there's so many external factors, but I think it would be good for us to kind of explain at least and, you know, give some example numbers to people about that, because when you do have the way like, you know, searching in MySQL works versus, you know, searching on our service is like dramatically different from a technological standpoint. to the point that even making a request to our servers and getting the results back, it still ends up being faster. And it's just, like I said, because MySQL is not designed for that. And so I think, yeah, that's a good idea. We should actually put together some benchmarks.
And we were talking about this earlier about how if you do a search on, let's say, wptamarin.com and the auto suggestions come up, how do you make it so that the delay between when I'm performing a search and it's offloading the Swift type and when I see the results, how do you keep that timing down to a minimum so there's no large delay?
So it's a lot of different pieces.
A lot of magic.
it's a fun thing to work on because there's a lot of things that, like, the lowest level where we can just say, let's just make, you know, say our core algorithms, let's make those faster, or let's spend more money on our servers and make our servers faster. And there's a lot of things you can do at the simplest level. And then what we try to do is we try to do that, but we also layer a lot of things on top of it. So we can say for WP Tavern, well, what are the most popular searches on WP Tavern? And so we can say, let's get ready for these searches because we know they're going to be coming, and kind of prepare the results because, you know, we know somebody's going to come to WP Tavern and search for WordPress Weekly. And so we should be able to kind of prep that and have it ready and not have to, you know, go through the process of computing the results every time somebody types it in. So we kind of, you know, do some caching is what, you know, we would call that. It's kind of, it's an intricate system, but, you know, we kind of cache some result sets. We also, you know, one of the things that we do that is going to be happening coming forward is that we're going to start putting Swift type data centers in all different parts of the world, because a lot of the time that's spent going to Swift type is not actually spent on our servers. Our servers are very fast. They'll return results in 15 milliseconds. And so when you have something that is that fast, you spend actually a lot of your time just traveling across the, you know, the United States or to wherever your servers are.
The interweb.
Exactly. So see, like right now, most of our servers are in Dallas. And so, you know, if your servers are in Virginia, it's got to go from Virginia to Dallas. And that round trip, you know, it actually ends up, you know, composing most of the time.
So at some point, SwiftType will run on the same basis of, let's say, a content distribution network, having multiple points of distribution for SwiftType data.
Yep, that's a perfect analogy, actually. You know, we're going to be having, you know, exactly kind of like our own content delivery network is going to exist, and we're going to have data centers in Europe, in Asia, and, you know, multiple data centers in North America.
Sounds awesome. I mean, it's incredible that you say that you can still increase the speed, because based on my experience in using the service, it's really fast already. It's kind of mind-blowing fast because of that connection. Sarah, do you have any more questions before we get on to the listener question segment?
No, I'm good here.
Okay. So we do have one listener question from Andreas, and he asks, is it or will it be possible to add user and user meta search using the API? Likewise with post types and post meta.
Yes, yeah, so that's actually possible right now with the API. I don't think we've ever gotten a question for if it's possible with the API that has not been possible. So the API is extremely, extremely flexible. But that said, you know, we want to work to, you know, move a lot of that functionality to be exposed in, you know, in our different interfaces. So like the WordPress plugin, and also in just like the SwiftType dashboard. So that is something that we talk a lot about with the WordPress plugin, is kind of allowing people to pull in. Obviously, you know, most complex WordPress sites aren't just storing the standard post data. They have, you know, custom post types, they have custom fields. And we support that reasonably well right now, but there's a lot more that we want to do as far as, you know, expanding that in such a way that people can pull that data in automatically. And that's actually going to be coming up pretty soon for us, is exposing that ability. We actually have we have a little tutorial on our website about how to do that with just by adding a filter, because we have some hooks in place that allow you to do that now. But it does involve, you know, writing a little PHP function to do it right now. So we want to make that easier for everyone.
Okay, sounds good. That's going to do it for all the questions we have. I do want to mention the fact that we were talking about the SwiftType shirt earlier and how it emphasizes muscles. Well, as it turns out, Sarah and a couple of others in the chat room were wondering why they don't have shirts. And M. Riley, the guy that I thanked for the smooth install and configure experience for SwiftType, mentioned that if we want t-shirts, or anyone in the live chat room, if you send SwiftType your t-shirt size, they will send one to you. So I want to thank you and M. Riley for being awesome to send out SwiftType t-shirts to everyone participating in the chat room right now. That's pretty cool stuff. And I think that means we'll have more muscular WordPress people.
That's right. It's just what we need.
So that's awesome. So
we'll send you guys a picture.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. We love that.
And we'll put a filter on it.
Oh, man. Not me. Not from my phone. Hey, Quinn, I want to thank you very much for spending your Friday evening with us. To tell us again who you are, contact information, and where we can find you at.
My name's Quinn, and you can reach me at QHOXIE, QHOXIE, at SwiftType.com. Anytime you guys need anything, or if you just have questions about WordPress or search, I'm happy to help out. And we're at SwiftType.com, so anything you guys are interested in with search, we're happy to help. And I really appreciate you guys having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot, Quinn. WordPress search is something that everybody is looking forward to improving. I started this process earlier in the summer of looking for different alternatives because I've had it. I just reached a boiling point with the WordPress built-in search. Tried Elasticsearch. That didn't go over very well. And then I tried SwiftType, and, well, I haven't had a reason to try any other site or service. So congratulations to you guys. It works, and I've been happy with my experience so far, and all the best to you, and the best of luck to SwiftType.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate the kind words and all the feedback we've been able to get from you guys.
All right, so that was Quinn Hoxie of SwiftType, and we're going to cover a couple of announcements here for the next episode of WordPress Weekly. In fact, next week is Spooky, Friday the 13th, which I've actually done a WordPress Weekly on Friday the 13th before, and usually something goes wrong. So I don't know. I have to look back in the archive. But John James Jacoby, I call him Triple J, he'll be our special guest next week to talk about his new gig with 10Up and to give us an update as to what's going on with the BBs, also known as Buddy Press and BB Press. I think that's going to be an awesome show. Looking forward to that. So that does it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes, using SwiftType, by the way, if you want to search, for on WPTavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0. And you can also follow Sarah on Twitter. Sarah, what's your Twitter handle?
It's Polly Plummer. P-O-L-L-Y-P-L-U-M-M-E-R.
Polly Plummer. There you have it. So until next week, everybody, have a safe weekend, everyone.